tenants were gone, but the building wasn't torn down immediately. That happened the following spring. Souvenir hunters showed up in January of 1949. Everyone wanted something from the not-to-be-forgotten Spanish Grill. One man bought a complete marble staircase for a house he was building in the British properties in West Vancouver. The 7-foot bathtubs went the fastest. Most envied was the tub that Winston Churchill splashed in. And the giant gargoyles, which looked out across Vancouver from their perches high atop the 15-story building, found resting places in Stanley Park, along the wooded pathways that thread through the trees. The Vancouver Daily Province declared the demolition the biggest wreckage in the city's history. It lasted over 10 months and cost close to $1 million. When it was time to haul the rubble away, one familiar man returned.
Coincidentally, by that time I was in the trucking business.
Bob McEwen came back to the hotel.
And I got the contract from the Cleveland Wrecking Company to haul all the debris away. I didn't make any money. As a matter of fact, I guess I just about went broke on it. But we had to dump it for free. And then the drive-in theater out at New Westminster on off Lovie, we built those tiers. You know how they park on tiers?
Mm-hmm.
We built those out of the debris.
Life could not have predicted that the same person who led the fight to save the hotel would be one of the few to carry it away in pieces. To add insult, he didn't get paid. Another coincidence was hidden in the paneling of one of the hotel walls. It was an illustrated guide to Vancouver for visitors, published in 1913. The surprising part was that the same address of the hotel's builders was also the address of the wreckers on 782 Howe Street. The city grew around the block at Georgia and Granville. After they tore the hotel down, it sat as a parking lot for 30 years, before the Pacific Mall officially started building its $95 million shopping center, which stands there today.
I came upon this because I wrote a book about a friend of mine called Kurt Lang. The book was called At the World's Edge, and he was one of the few kids who lived in the hotel because his father was a serviceman, and when he came home from the war, there was no place for him to stay, and he was able to get into the hotel, and he stayed there with Kurt, my friend, and his wife. Yeah, so he was 12 when he lived in the hotel, and for him it was kind of an interesting place to be for a kid. He would get his bike and roam all over downtown, and he had quite a good time.
So my name is Will Woods, and I am the founder and chief storyteller at Forbidden Vancouver Walking Tours.
Thank you. And was there anything else you wanted to say about this?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Thank you to Will Woods and especially Claudia Cornwell for sharing her recorded interviews, Tom Holliston for the use of his voice, and Rowan Chapman for his rendition of Django Reinhardt's Minor Swing. My name is Carrie Swigum, and you are listening to CJSF.
This documentary is part of the Making Time for Radio series funded by CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby, on unceded Coast Salish territories. Listen to the whole series on soundcloud.com/CJSF.
Dear listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to 2.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Bird Note. The songs of two common finches provide a steady soundtrack in cities across North America. There's the house finch. And the American goldfinch. While they can sound similar, a couple of key features help set them apart. House finches sing sweetly, but often have a sharp, buzzy note near the end. Listen. American goldfinches improvise the order of their songs, which can make them confusing to ID at first. But the songs have a few things in common. Goldfinches sing rapidly, often repeating a note several times. And while not part of the song, a singing American goldfinch might make the species' signature call, which sounds a bit like someone saying, potato chip. So, one more time. Here's a house finch, more melodic and with a buzzy note near the end. And here's an American goldfinch saying potato chip and repeating notes. Listen for these birds singing over the sidewalk from spring to the end of summer. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Did you know you can listen to Bird Note in your podcast app? Subscribe to Bird Note Daily and never miss an episode.
This is not a test. On This Looking at Lyme, we head all the way to Munich, Germany, and to meet a doctor who is on the leading edge of testing for Lyme and other infections. Come along for the ride. We're going to meet Dr. Armin Schwarzbach. Dr. Armin Schwarzbach has been studying diagnostic tests for Borrelia burgdorferi and co-infections for over 15 years. In that time, he has tested over 50,000 patients. He's one of the leading experts on Lyme disease testing and other pathogens. He joins us from Munich. Welcome, Armin, to our podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Hello, how are you? I'm here in Germany, sitting in a hot atmosphere.
Armin, how did you become involved in working with Lyme disease and other tick-borne illnesses?
To make a longer story short, I'm diagnosed a so-called multiple sclerosis patient in 2004-2005, and I did a special test for this patient. It was named the ELISpot or lymphocyte transformation test that time, and the patient was without any antibodies, nothing in the bloodstream, suffering from multiple sclerosis, treated with corticosteroids, nearly dying, sitting in a wheelchair, no possibility to get healthy again, I did this test on her, and I was surprised that she was positive for Borrelia burgdorferi, the pathogen for Lyme disease. And after that, the doctor called me, a therapist, oh, could it be maybe neuroborreliosis? And I said, I don't know, because multiple sclerosis is multiple sclerosis, and neuroborreliosis is neuroborreliosis. But he treated her by my advice, by these findings in this test without antibodies, and no antibodies in spinal fluid, no antibodies in the bloodstream, and the patient is cured until nowadays. So this was a lucky case, and it changed completely my medical world, completely.
Oh, I can imagine that just knocked you on a new trajectory. And then, so how did you then become involved in laboratory work and improving the testing?
Yeah, because I saw in this that the antibodies are not reliable. Antibodies, ELISA is worst case scenario, don't trust in ELISA. It's around 15% sensitivity, we name it. So very, very often, very common false negative. The Western blot, forget the Western blots. What is it telling Western blots? It's a screening test for transmission of Borrelia burgdorferi, but no activity test. And so when I started with this, I came to the cellular analytical part of laboratory medicine. I'm in laboratory now for 40 years. So I worked in biochemistry, but I never have seen such cases where no antibodies, but cellular immune reactions.
Oh, that's so fascinating. So why do people send their blood to you in Germany for testing? How would that testing be different compared to what we have here in Canada?
In Germany, I have some, you would say, competitors or other laboratories offering similar tests or maybe same tests. So this was not clear that time to me that some are caring also in Germany for this project. So I'm not alone offering this cellular analytics in Germany. But in other countries, when I traveled around and people contacted me, patients for getting this test, nobody is doing the test in Canada or in Australia or in South Africa or in many other European countries, very surprisingly.
And so what is the difference between direct and indirect testing?
Yeah, direct test is you need to get a biopsy from a bull's rash, as an example. You isolate the pathogen, in this case Borrelia burgdorferi, and you do a culture on it, and you do a PCR on it. This is a direct test. You find directly the pathogen. It's similar to SARS-CoV-2 swabs PCR. Okay, but if you do an indirect test, this is the part of humoral and cellular immune responses. This is a part of antibodies and T cellular immune responses. That's different. This is indirect detection of pathogens in the bloodstream, which is easy to do.
Oh, and then what is the difference between B cells and T cells and how those impact the immune response or the antibody response?
B cells are the antibodies and the T cells are the lymphocytes. Antibodies are proteins. Lymphocytes are living cells, living individuals fighting against pathogens. And in the whole diagnostic world, I think they are underrepresented, so nobody is caring for cellular tests. We have some tests for tuberculosis. It's named the QuantiFERON test. This is astonishingly, it's CDC preferred test, this interferon gamma release assay. But for Lyme disease, this is, as an example, not accepted. Very interesting.
Okay. Can you help me understand, because I always find this part confusing, what is the difference between IgG and IgM?
Yeah, these are both markers for systemic infections. So if a pathogen is penetrating your body, normally you should produce IgM antibodies, the antibodies of the first phase of your immune answer of your humoral, the Th2 immune system. After a while, you produce IgG antibodies, which are long-term antibodies. So the half-lifetime of these antibodies is different. The IgG can persist over months, years, and the IgM just for very few weeks. But interestingly, in Lyme disease, we have persistencies of IgM antibodies for years without IgG antibodies.
Okay, so, and we also interviewed Dr. Leona Gilbert from Finland in episode 14. So she was speaking to us about your TickPlex test And it was really exciting to hear that you can test for so many different microbes. Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about the TickPlex?
Yeah, this a longer story also. The TickPlex was developed because we saw together with Professor Gilbert that we have persister forms, round bodies of Borrelia burgdorferi, and intracellular persister forms, some name it cysts or L forms or pleomorphic forms, however you want to name these round bodies. And we sat together in a sauna, in a Finnish sauna, drinking some beer. It's some years ago. Yes, it was 2000. I don't remember exactly, 2012 or so. We said, why should we not test for these persister form antibodies? Why not? And that was a breakthrough because we found around 98% now with a persister form antibodies. And by this, Leon Gilbert, she's a medical, a test producer professional. I'm a medical professional. I helped her in with patients, and she did this TickPlex test. And the TickPlex has also really a very interesting point. We found also that all of these patients that multiple infections, so-called co-infections from tick bites or reactivated infections, we name it opportunistic infections, viruses, and so on. So she designed a panel for that, for these co-infections, the first ELISA in the world. The ELISA technique is more sensitive than IFA, immune fluorescence assays, much better test. We like that test in our laboratories. So she developed also a broad-ranged 20 IgG, IgM together, a combination for chlamydia, for mycoplasma, for Epstein-Barr virus, for Bartonella rickettsia, all of these co-infections, Ehrlichia. So why not to check for patients with such a test panel? Because we find in every patient multiple infections. There's not one patient I diagnose with just Lyme disease. They all have different infections, or they don't have Lyme disease at this moment. They have other co-infections or other opportunistic infections. So why not to check for multiple infections?
And then I've heard you refer to both co-infections and opportunistic infections. What is the difference between those and how they manifest in the body?
Yeah, the co-infections are, don't name it co-infections, I don't like this word. Mm. I like more infection or tick-borne diseases, infections coming from a tick bite, vector-borne infections. This is Bartonella, this is Ehrlichia anaplasma, this is Babesia, and this is Rickettsia, the big four ones. Also, we have now Borrelia miyamotoi, number five. This is directly transmitted by a vector, these pathogens. The opportunistic infections mean we have them in our bodies. As an example, the herpes on your lips or the blisters in your mouth, which can be a Coxsackie virus infection, very, very common in Canada. Interestingly, I think it's the same percentage as we find Lyme disease in Canada or more. You have different reactivations of this normally immune-controlled viruses or chlamydia, mycoplasma, which makes some sinusitis, some slime production, biofilms, also intracellular. So we need to differentiate. It's not enough to say this is Lyme disease because symptoms are not specific for Lyme disease.
Now, feel free to dodge this question, but I have to ask, why do companies, countries, and the medical profession continue to use flawed tests?
Yeah, this is a good question. They don't accept chronic infections. In all of the years, I have learned that I accept chronic infections, chronic Lyme, chronic Bartonellosis, chronic rickettsiosis, but the majority of doctors don't accept this. They say, yes, you can have a current, a recent infection, a fresh infection, but it cannot get chronic. This is the struggle we have politically with this societies doing the guidelines. So what I'm fighting for, the acceptance of chronic infection, and this we can do by this wonderful blood test, like the TickPlex, TickPlex Basic, TickPlex Plus, the ELISpot, also the natural killer cells are helpful. We can do from bloodstream. We cannot do biopsies. We cannot do surgery from nerves. We cannot do surgery from brain to do biopsies, to do the direct test for the pathogen by culture and PCR. It's impossible.
And then I know this year you've been really busy, your laboratory's been very busy testing for COVID. And I also saw on your website that you have therapists that are using the Armin lab tests for clinical serological monitoring for COVID patients. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I like the infections. I like the viruses in diagnosing them in general. It's not just SARS-CoV-2. This is my specialty for years, and my clinical time in the early 90s, I was clinical infectious disease consultant for a while. So I know how to handle clinically with the symptoms, and I'm a medical doctor too. So what I see in this model with the three eyes with this SARS-CoV-2, we diagnose it with antibodies, IgG, IgA, very, very interesting marker, the IgA. I would like that for Borrelia burgdorferi, the IgA antibodies, local inflammatory antibodies, IgG, IgM are not representing localized infections, inflammation. And the second eye is the immune dysfunction. So I like immunology to offer some tests for that. And the last three eye we need to diagnose and treat in all of these infections, not just SARS-CoV-2, is the inflammation, the inflammatory markers. We can do some cytokines, TH1, TH2. So we have good chances in laboratory also to help therapists and to give additional information about infection, inflammation, and immune dysfunction.
Oh, that must be so helpful to see those changes in their patients. Are you?
Yes. Yeah. Very, very interesting. Also, the therapists need to do that. It's not just enough to say, I do now my antibodies or my, for SARS-CoV-2, we have also the iSpot, it's called. We can differentiate between past infection and currently active infection with interleukin 2. We have the same test also now for Borrelia burgdorferi, the iSpot its name with interleukin 2. But nevertheless, a test never can exclude anything, please. A neurologist can never exclude neuroborreliosis. Never. There's no test in the world for exclusion. We can say it's a high sensitivity, it's a high specificity, but we need to think clinically. We need to accept what the patient is telling you for Lyme disease or other infections.
Are you seeing people test other tissues from the body as well?
Yes, in Europe we have this acrodermatitis, which is a very dry skin. On the hands, as an example, we can do biopsies and we can check for Borrelia burgdorferi in that with a pathologist and also PCR specialist. But nevertheless, to prove it in the tissue is also not 100% sensitive, so we have a lot of false negatives there. It's not so easy to diagnose by PCR. You have also learned from SARS-CoV-2. So there's no 100% guarantee, but if you have a tissue biopsy or do surgery, you can do the hip. As an example, if you have a hip replacement, you can send laboratories some parts of the bone which has the arthritis and then the arthrosis, and then we can try to find out Borrelia burgdorferi and other pathogens.
Oh, it really sounds like you're pushing the boundaries there. I just have one more question. I'm curious about, are you seeing any correlation between COVID and Epstein-Barr virus or any other infections?
Yes, I have developed, because I'm coming from this opportunistic field, so I work with HIV patients, the same situation as you have here, we have here with the SARS-CoV-2 patients, immune suppression and so, and a lot of these HIV patients have not problems with HIV, they have problems with these opportunistic infections, EBV, CMV, cytomegalovirus, Coxsackie virus, echovirus, also herpes simplex virus, HHV6, HHV7, HHV8, so they have a lot of virus problems, also yeast and mold, because they're immune suppressed. And we have this exactly the same model in SARS-CoV-2. Therefore, I developed an opportunistic checklist for that. It's not a Lyme disease checklist, for also long COVID to find out clinically which symptoms are EBV symptoms, which symptoms are parvovirus, B19 symptoms, also a heart rhythm problem virus. It's not just all Borrelia burgdorferi doing heart rhythm problems. So you can differentiate. It costs nothing. You can download on website or I can send you. And then clinically, you can differentiate which infection might be active in which long COVID patient. I did this successfully with a lot of patients, and we find a lot of EBV, Epstein-Barr virus reactivations. And interestingly, last sentence to that, 1-2 weeks ago, there came studies about that. I think 30% of long COVID patients might have reactivations of Epstein-Barr viruses, but EBV. But these groups are not checking for other viruses. This is what I cannot accept. Normally, you should check for multiple infections. All of these patients have several viruses active. It's not just one. So we need to come more to chronic multiple reactivations of these normally immune-controlled viruses.
Wow. And I mean, just compiling all of that data and analyzing it must be such an important part. What is next in testing?
Yeah, what is next? The next chapter, I would like to have a biofilm test. Because we have a lot of biofilm discussions with Borrelia, Lyme disease, and also Chlamydia, Mycoplasma, Yersinia, Campylobacter, whatever. So we need biofilms because they are communication areas, and we need some tests for that, I'm sure. Also, what is coming next? I'm in the parasites now working more and more. We don't have so many good tests for parasitical infections, toxocaracanis, very common together with Lyme disease, with neuropsychiatric symptoms, or Ascaris zoom, which has to do with the dogs and the cats and your domestics, as an example, mm-hmm. eat up the eggs. So I'm more in the field now, also parasites, viruses, other bacteria, gut viruses, very, very interesting. Everybody has a problem. I diagnosed with Lyme disease with the gut, and nearly all in Canada have Coxsackie virus, Echovirus, double infection. So you need to treat the virus. Also, you need to treat the gut, the natural immunity. Also, a challenge will be the gut bacteria, and where I'm not so strong, where we need more tests and also more input is the yeast and mold field in the world.
Wow. Well, that was absolutely incredible. I just want to thank you so much for joining us on our podcast and teaching all of our listeners this complicated part of Lyme disease diagnostics. Thank you, Armin.
Thank you, Sarah, so much. And don't fear a tick, you know, don't fear a tick bite. We have good chances to diagnose nowadays and also good treatment options. The mistakes are not done from our side.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah, so much. Have a nice day.
Dr. Armin Schwarzbach has been studying diagnostic tests for Borrelia burgdorferi and co-infections for years. We reached him in Munich, and I'm sure glad we did. It was so interesting to hear him explain the difference between co-infections and opportunistic infections, and also to learn about the different forms of Borrelia, such as the persister form. That's another podcast of Can Lyme's Looking at Lyme. Thank you for listening, and remember, stay safe in the outdoors.
Arts Society presents the Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival. With water's wisdom as this year's theme, the festival enlivens the Renfrew Collingwood neighborhood by inviting local residents to engage with, learn about, and value local nature with events and workshops. From September 9th to 29th, come together as a community, build social connections and a sense of belonging while sharing skills and cultural traditions. For more information on the festival and to register for events, go to stillmoonarts.ca. Contribute to creating a stronger, healthier community at the Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival, September 9th to 29th.
normal part of your sending?
That's the way I've always sung. This is my song.
Are there subliminal duets?
Absolutely not.
The Metal Meltdown, a show that brings you melody-driven heavy metal from around the world. Melting your ears every Monday night from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.